Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing the sixth chapter of the seventh canto entitled Prahlad Instructs His Demonic Schoolmates. Text number 15. Veteshun nitya binivishtacheta. Vidvang shadoshan paravitta hartuhu. Pratyeha vata pyajitindriyastad. Ashantakamo harate kutumbi. Viteshu nitya binivesita chita. Vidvangshadoshang paravitta hartu. Pratyeha vata pyajitindriyastad. Ashantakamo harate kutumbi. Viteshu nitya binivista cheta. Vidvangsta doshang para vita hartuhu. Pratyeha vata pyajitindriyastad. Ashantakamo harate kutumbi. Ladies, please. Viteshu, in material wealth. Nitya abhinivishtachetaha, whose mind is always absorbed. Vidvan, having learned. Cha, also. Dosham, the fault. Paravetahartuhu, of one who steals the money of others by cheating or by transactions on the black market. Preitya, after dying. Iha, in this material world. Va, or. Atapi, still. Ajita indriyaha, because of being unable to control the senses. Tat, that. Ashantakamaha, whose desires are unsatiated. Harite, steals. Kutumbi, too fond of his family. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If a person too attached to the duties of family maintenance is unable to control his senses, the core of his heart is immersed in how to accumulate money. Although he knows that one who takes the wealth of others will be punished by the laws of the government and by the laws of Yamaraj after death, he continues cheating others to acquire money. Purport. Especially in these days, people do not believe in a next life or in the court of Yamaraj and the various punishments of the sinful. But at least one should know that one who cheats others to acquire money will be punished by the laws of government. Nonetheless, people do not care about the laws of this life or those governing the next. Despite whatever knowledge one has, one cannot stop his sinful activities if he is unable to control his senses. Om Ganatim Randasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sarvabhutale Srimate Pralananda Samitone. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sarvabhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Samitone. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vacharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschayati Adi Chitarine. So this is pretty much the essence of all difficulties here in this material world, is the inability to control the senses. We've become so enamored with the glittering attractions of this material world that our senses have become wild, like wild horses. Like, for instance, a wild stallion in the field doesn't want to be controlled. And if you try to tame the stallion, you know, he's going to buck and he's going to kick you off and want to run whatever direction he wants to go in. That's why for horses they have these blinders. They're little flaps that are put next to their eyes. So they can't see anything except what's directly in front of them. It's a way of controlling their senses, forced control of the senses. You know, because the horses are so, some would call it willful, others would call it stubborn or whimsical, that they just want to do whatever they want to do to such a degree that to properly utilize the horse, not only do you need the blinders to blind his senses from other distractions, but you also need reins to give proper direction, and you also need, to a certain degree, spurs to spur the horse forward. And if you're a little bit more compassionate, you won't use spurs, but you still use your heels to indicate to the horse what direction you want it to turn. So it takes constant direction. It takes constant vigilance. It's not that you can just let the horse go to its according to its own desire, because it's not going to take you where you want it to go if you just let it go by its own desire. The same way with our senses. There's a reason why our senses have been compared to horses. It's a very appropriate example. And just like in the Bhagavad Gita, one of Vijaya's favorite photos is that of the five senses in the mind. He always shows it when he shows the Bhagavad Gita to the students, explaining about how these horses represent our senses, sight, smell, hearing, touch, and taste. Then the reins for the horses is like our mind. Our mind provides direction and guidance to the senses. And then the holder of the reins, the driver of the chariot, is our intelligence. And then the passenger in the chariot is this freaked out looking ghostly dude that's almost crying, "Oh my God, stop, slow down!" Because the intelligence isn't properly trained, and because the intelligence is impure, then the mind isn't giving proper direction to the senses and basically letting the senses run wild because there's too much slack in the reins. And then with slack in the reins, the senses, namely the horses, just take advantage. And they run whatever direction they want to run in. Like, for instance, if you see something nice, I mean, it's a simple example. You know, if a very beautiful person walks down, what I actually like to look at is other people's reactions, both men and women. Like, for instance, when I was distributing books in the airport, a very beautiful woman would walk by, and I would watch everyone else, see their reaction. And everyone's heads would turn, the men and the women. I think it was Devamrita Swami that said that, you know, everyone's favorite object of sense gratification is the female form, for both men and women. You look. Women check out other women just as much as men check out women. You know, so you see something nice, and, you know, it just drags you in that direction. You hear something nice, and you want to put everything aside and just listen. You taste something nice, and your sense of your tongue, your sense of taste, just wants to completely devour that thing. So with everything, there's so many senses, and there's so many objects, and these objects are constantly competing with other objects. For which sense is going to have the most control to be able to actually drag us physically to that object? So just imagine if you have a chariot and you have five different horses and each horse is pulling in a different direction. It's a very chaotic sort of situation. And this is actually the situation of most people in the material world. So as I was reminded of Lord Rishabhadev's teachings, very famous verse, Nunang pramatak kurute vikarma yad indriya pritaya aprinoti nasadu manyaya ta atmanoyam asanapi kleshada asadeha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body, which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. So this is our situation. We're all mad, literally insane, to pursue sense gratification. And because of this insane desire, we're doing all kinds of abominable activities that are actually entangling us further and further in this material existence. Just like it mentioned in today's present verse. Everyone's so insane with material lust that they're doing all kinds of activities. Stealing money, cheating others. I mean, so many examples. All you have to do is just read the newspaper. And every single day you'll read page after page of people cheating other people out of money. You know, like the one of the most recent things that tangibly affected so many people is some very greedy people in the banks colluded with each other to get a bunch of junk debt and sell it as securities. Basically, they loaned a bunch of money to people who couldn't afford to pay back the loans for expensive homes that they couldn't afford, and they knew that these people would default on these loans. So they packaged up all this bad money, this bad debt, as a so-called security, and then sold the securities to people all over the world. And they sold billions of dollars worth of these securities, knowing that these securities would fail. But meanwhile, they also, because there's different things in when you deal with stocks. You know, there's puts and calls. So when you purchase a put option, what you're doing is you're actually making money based upon how much money the stock loses. So no matter whether the stock increases or decreases, if you're intelligent about it, you can make money either way. So these banks that package these securities, they purchased all of the put options for these securities. And they didn't sell the put options to anyone else because they wanted to make all the money. So not only did they make money off the sales of these securities, but they also made money off all these securities tanking. And so they literally made trillions of dollars. And then when the businesses themselves, the banks themselves, were so much in debt that they were actually supposed to go out of business, then the government bails them out. So they profited three times off this cheating activity. So sometimes people think, oh, it's only in third world countries that there's cheating and there's, you know, all these terrible activities. Like, for instance, you go to India and the cheating is just so crude and so blatantly in your face that you know you're being cheated. You know, just because I'm white-bodied, everyone's going to charge me triple the price of what it actually costs. I know that. You know, but people think that just because we're here in America that there's no cheating. But actually, the cheating has just become so sophisticated that nobody really notices or thinks twice about it. But the cheating is on such a massive scale that it actually plunges the entire world into a recession. So this is one example of this cheating, of this stealing that's happening. And, you know, these people, they don't believe in reincarnation. They don't believe that they'll be held accountable by Yamaraj. And they're so just blatant about it, they don't even believe they'll be punished by the laws of the government either. Which, in fact, they haven't been. So this just goes to illustrate people's insanity. How insane, how mad people become simply after material desires. And it's so ridiculous, actually, at people's, you know, the nature of people's behavior. It's they're behaving in bad ways, thinking that nobody's noticing. You know, kind of like if there's some parents in the room and then the child is misbehaving. The child's thinking that just because he has his back to his parents, that nobody is noticing his misbehavior. And that's factually how people who are maddened by material sense desires, that's how they behave. They turn their back to the rest of the world and think that, well, because my back's to the world, nobody's actually noticing my behavior and how it's affecting other people. And then when other people call them on it, they act so surprised, like, oh, you know, what's this conspiracy? Why is everyone blaming me and accusing me of all these different things? And they act so innocent, like their activities have no bearing on what reactions they're getting. When in reality, everyone with a little bit of intelligence can actually see what it is they're doing, even though they're so mad and that they're not even admitting to themselves, they're not even honest with themselves what it is they're doing. And then when other people mention to them, oh, you know, what's this conspiracy? Why is everyone talking about me like this? Even this morning, I was listening to a lecture by Prabhupada when I was dressing the deities. Prabhupada was mentioning about this very same thing. People engaging in these sinful activities, thinking that they can get away with it, thinking that nobody will notice. Prabhupada was making the point that, Krishna's right and left eyes are the sun and the moon. Krishna says he's the taste of water. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a whole list of all these different things, of different ways that we can see and understand him. Prabhupada said, where is there no sun? Where is there no moonshine? Even on top of that, where is there no water? So how is there ever any possibility of us escaping the vigilance of Krishna? It's not possible. Even we may fool the rest of society, we may fool everyone else, but you can't fool Krishna. Krishna always knows what's in your heart. He always knows our activities, what our motivations are, and we'll always be held accountable to that. So that's why Prahlad is reaching out, trying to be so compassionate to his classmates, saying, hey, you know, wake up. These false teachings given by our teachers and our fathers, this is all bogus. It's all just illusory teachings meant to further entangle us in the material world. You know, this is the real reality, what I'm telling you. This is what's actually going on, so, you know, pay attention. You know, don't get bewildered by all these false teachings. So, considering that today is also the actual day of the marriage of Tulsi and Shalagram, I thought it'd be nice just to go over that pastime a little bit. So, as many of you already know, Tulsi in the spiritual world is a Sakhi, known as Brindadevi. And it's actually a really interesting pastime. She, Tulsi Devi, Brindadevi in the spiritual world, she actually had some intimate pastimes with Krishna. And she fainted out of ecstasy. And then Srimati Radharani saw her in that condition and actually cursed her, telling her, you know, you need to go down to the material world now for a little bit. Because Radharani was, you know, displeased. She felt a little bit transcendentally jealous. And these pastimes are in the Brahmavivarta Purana. And also, in addition to her being cursed, Radharani also cursed Sudama. Or is it Sridama? I forget, it was one of the two. Because, I think it was Sudama, because Sudama was actually desiring to want to marry Brindadevi in the spiritual world. And so both of them were cursed by Radharani to come down to the material world. And both of them also had remembrance of their spiritual identity, Dutta Smaran. And so when Tulsi was born, she was given the name Tulsi by her parents. She was performing great austerities and penances to Lord Brahma for the benediction that she could marry Narayan. Because before she came down to the material world, she was given the benediction by Krishna that she would come down and her desire to be with Krishna would be satisfied. But that she would have to perform penances and austerities to please Lord Brahma to marry Narayan. So she followed those instructions, and she performed great austerities and penances, and Lord Brahma came before her and offered her some benedictions. And he also initiated her in chanting a specific mantra to Radharani to appease Srimati Radharani so she wouldn't be angry at her for her intimate dealings with Krishna anymore. And so Lord Brahma said that, yes, you will be married to Vishnu, but that'll happen later. First, you have to marry this other person, Shankachuda. Shankachuda being the incarnation of Sudama, who came from the spiritual world like you. And he's been performing austerities to me also, to actually have you as his wife, because he remembered from in the spiritual world when he desired to marry you. And so that's how both of them got together. The marriage was arranged by Lord Brahma. And Shankarchuda was actually one of the Danavas. He was one of the demons. And he was very powerful. So when Lord Brahma appeared before Shankarchuda, Lord Brahma said, "What benediction do you want?" And Shankarchuda said, "I want two benedictions. One, I want to be unconquerable by the demigods. And two, I want to marry Tulsi." And so Lord Brahma satisfied those desires and said that Shankarchuda would be unconquered by the demigods as long as Tulsi maintained her chastity. And so they got married, and Shankarchuda actually conquered the heavenly planets. And there's this big battle going on. And then right at the very end of the battle, what happened was that all the demigods knew that they were defeated by Shankarchuda's potency. And so they prayed to Lord Vishnu, "Please do something to help us." And so Lord Vishnu agreed. He said, "Yes, I'll come and I will remove the protection that Shankarchuda has." So Lord Vishnu goes and disguises himself as Shankarchuda and goes to his home while Shankarchuda is on the battlefield. And disguised as Shankarchuda, he fools Tulsi into thinking that she's with her husband. And so he spends the night with Tulsi. And then in the morning, he reveals that actually he's Vishnu. And Tulsi gets infuriated. She gets so angry at him, saying, "How dare you violate my chastity? I was so faithful and chaste to my husband, and now you violated this." And even though at the same time it fulfilled the promise of Lord Brahma that she would be married to Vishnu in the end, even though it wasn't exactly how she wanted. And she was so angry at Vishnu that she cursed him. She said, "You're so stone-hearted that you violate my chastity in this terrible way that I curse you to take form as a stone, because you're so stone-hearted." And so then Vishnu curses Tulsi, saying, "Well, you'll always have to take birth as a plant, as the Tulsi plant. And but you'll be so dear to me, you'll be the queen of all the flowers, and you'll be so dear to me that you'll always be offered to me. And so you'll always be married to me. And I also won't accept any offerings unless you're present on the offering in your plant form, either as the flower or a leaf." So that's one reason why for the offerings we always offer a leaf or a flower from Tulsi. And that's also why in the lifting of the Govardhan Hill Leela, you know, when they're offering in the Anakut ceremony, when they're offering all the food to Govardhan, Govardhan was always saying, "Anior, Anior, bring me more, bring me more." And they were literally giving him mountains of rice, literal mountains, gigantic mountains of rice. And just with one handful, he was just swallowing the whole mountain of rice. "Anior, Anior." Then finally, one intelligent devotee gave him one Tulsi leaf. And immediately he was satisfied. So this is the potency of Tulsi. This is how dear she is to Krishna. And so then once Tulsi's chastity was broken, Shankarchuda immediately knew that her chastity was broken. And so in this massive war that was going on between the demons and the demigods, Lord Shiva was also involved in this war. And so Shankarchuda appeared before Lord Shiva without his armor on. And Lord Shiva threw his trident, and Shankarchuda paid his obeisances to Lord Shiva in the trident, and then sat down in a yogic posture and meditated upon the lotus feet of Krishna. And while he was meditating upon Krishna, the trident smashed his head to bits. And then Shankarchuda dispersed his bones, because his whole body was completely broken to shards. And so Shankarachuda dispersed his bones to all the oceans. Then his bones turned into conch shells. And that's why when you worship Shalagram, you always worship Shalagram with a conch and tulsi. Because the conch represents Shankarachuda. It's also called a shank. And tulsi is the leaf, and then Shalagram is Vishnu. So that's the whole pastime. I mean, it goes into far greater depth, but that's just an overview of the pastime. I'll end there if there's any comments, questions. Yeah, transcendental anger. Yeah, it's not material in any sense. It's in the Brahma Vivarta Purana, and Amala Bhakta has translated that in his book. He has a book called The Life and Care of Tulsi Devi. Bhakta-san? Transcendental anger is there for a particular pastime. Where material anger is based upon false ego. You know, with material anger, you get angry that somebody did something to you, that something didn't go your way. Where with transcendental anger, there's no tinge of false ego. Yeah, Lord Nrsingadev. He has severe transcendental anger. Or Hanuman. He also properly engaged his anger by burning down Lanka. So anger in itself isn't material, it's just how the anger is utilized is whether it's material or spiritual. Anyone else? Try. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.